you came to my group's business meetings, it has nothing to do with freedom, trust me. Everybody, my name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm
grateful to be alive and sober and at this meeting. First things first, thank Allison for this kind invitation to me to be here with you tonight and to celebrate with the rest of the celebrants and really with all of us, people who celebrate like myself, God willing, each and every year. It is not so much about someone getting up here and celebrating 90 days or 6 years or whatever it may be, but it has a whole lot more to do with Alcoholics Anonymous and the love of God working in our lives. Because if you're a hopeless alcoholic and a real alcoholic like I was, you know, putting a drink down for an hour was a major miracle. And so when we accumulate time, days, weeks, months, into years, it truly is a gift of God. Big Book tells me that no human power could relieve him of alcoholism, that God could and would if he was sought. And if you're a real alcoholic, maybe a human power would, you know, relieve you of your alcoholism. But if you're not a real alcoholic, if you're a real alcoholic, you know that that's not going to work. And so when you're a real alcoholic in here, coming in here with a state of obsession, coming off another drunk and wondering, why am I going to stay sober? How's it going to work for me? And then you're given some information. I heard all three celebrants get up here and talk about this work that we do in the book has kept them separated. That's really, you find the only way to go, the only way that's going to give you not only relief, but freedom. It's about coming into this fellowship. I have found out from my own experience, and in this fellowship, getting some information from the 12 steps that are in the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we have an experience with that information, something happens. There's a shift that takes place that's beyond me, that's beyond us. And it really has a whole lot to do with God. When it comes to God, any words I say are going to fall short anyway. I do an injustice to God when I try to share with you about God. But that's what goes on in here, something way beyond this room, way beyond each and every one of us. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I have no problem saying that, although at some rooms you go to, it will split the room down the middle. In fact, I've seen people walk out during a talk when I said I was recovered because they don't get it. Now, I will not talk about anything I don't have experience with tonight because then I'd be a liar. I'll talk about everything I've experienced with, and that is also being a recovered alcoholic. So how come people walk out or get really start to shift in their chair, get really annoyed when you say you're recovered because what they hear is cured? Or they think you have to, like, hang in there a day at a time and do this a day at a time. And if you're in a state of obsession about drinking or thinking about a drink, it's normal because you're an alcoholic. Those are all lies. And that's by people who misinform. Meanwhile, but they're misinformed. Because when we study our book and have an experience with it, you'll find out you can get to a place that's recovered, and that is a lot different than being recovering. See, recovered means I'm free of the obsession and obviously the compulsion and a lot of the isms that go along with alcoholism. When I say I'm recovering, what I do right in that statement is shortchange the power of God. Why would God deny me a place of being free? Or do I think maybe God can't really do a sufficient enough job? Or efficient enough job? When I say I'm recovering, don't I excuse a lot of inappropriate behavior for someone who's supposed to be on this path, walking free with all the mistakes that we make? So I say I'm recovered for those three reasons, and also because I've experienced that. And what great hope that gives to someone who just walked in here tonight, or maybe one of those people who celebrate 90 days and still rocking and rolling, that you can get to a place where you can be recovered. Not cured, recovered. See, I do this a day at a time. I live a day at a time because that's my human condition. But my spirit, as I always have said, does not wear a watch. My God doesn't wear a watch. My God is. No before, no later on, is to this moment. And I have found that because I've experienced this many times. When I'm integrated with this power, that's where I am also. With no mind, I have presence. Because what my mind is going to do, and I've experienced this also, what my mind is going to do is tear me down. What my mind is going to do is keep me in befores. What my mind is going to do is keep me in later ons, looking for futures always to make the present okay. And all it does is just rip me apart. It pulls from this end and pulls from this end, and I'm never here, ever. What my mind will take me into dark alleys, into gutters, into places I really should not be visiting. It'll destroy every present moment because that's what my mind does. And my mind uses me, my thought process uses me, rather than me using my mind for whatever I need and me using my thoughts for whatever I need. That is being awake. The other way is being sound asleep. And I've been in those places of bondage of self, and they show up, and I don't even know when they show up. And I come out on the other end saying, now, what was that about? I experienced another strange mental blind spot in Alcoholics Anonymous, separated from alcohol. So what I do, and I work hard at this, is lots of inventory. And I'm on the phone with my sponsor, and I'm working with other people, and trying to work and embrace this power the way God allows me to. Because when I don't, I suffer. I'm back in bondage of self. When God separated me from alcohol, June 23rd, 1988, I had no plans about staying sober more than 20 minutes. I made a sincere plea to God, June 23rd, 1988, please take me from this. And I was left in a hallway, left to drink and die, to live in the streets and panhandle, live the life I was leading, which was really horrific. And whether you're Park Avenue or Park Bench, you don't have to eat out of dumpsters to be an alcoholic. Park Avenue or Park Bench, pain is pain. But my illness took me, my God took me to that place to be here tonight. But I made a sincere plea to God because I figured the next drink I was going to die. And I had no plans about staying sober very long. I just knew I didn't want to drink anymore, or not the next drink, because I knew the next drink was going to kill me. And I had no idea I was going to wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wasn't thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988. I had made attempts at Alcoholics Anonymous. I had 6 rehabs behind me. I had some jail stays behind me. I had a whole lot of homelessness behind me. I had a whole lot of degradation, demoralization, all the horrible things that go with this thing called alcoholism. But I had no plans about coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and raising my hand saying, I'm new, I need a sponsor. You know, or you know, when do I get my name in Dave Coyne? Or, you know, can I have a big book? AA was the furthest thing from my mind. God knew where he was going to send me, and it was here, because this was the last stop, and still is for me. With all the things that have been removed from my life and all the wonderful things that have been put in my life, this is the last stop for me, because when this stops, I die. How? Because I go back into sickness, and I go back to pick up a drink, and then I'm done. And that I'm convinced of. 1988, I was not thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous. I just wanted to escape the horror I was experiencing in that hallway in 1988. And all the things that took me to that one spot in 1988, in that hallway. Well, God in his infinite mercy had other plans for me and interrupted my death like he did many times. And this time he did a wonderful job for me. He gave me exactly what I needed, whether it was pain and suffering or joys that I've gotten in here. And after making a plea to this God, I wound up in my, God willing, 7th and last rehab. And little by slowly, things started to happen for me. Way beyond me, like I said when I opened this talk, way beyond Alcoholics Anonymous. Things were just done for me. It was a lot of connecting dots, and I wasn't even aware it was going on. But place to place to place. People would put my life for 10 minutes. People would put my life for 1988 who were still in my life. But the dots were being connected, and they were laid out for me. And little by slowly, things started to happen for me. There was a shift that was happening that happens in here, way beyond us. And it really came down to, had I conceded to my innermost self, deep down in here, without anyone having to convince me anymore that I was a real alcoholic. Well, guess what? With 6 rehabs behind me, the life I was leading, and I could not stop no matter how much I wanted to, I was way beyond convinced that I was a real alcoholic. I was so convinced I figured I was going to die an alcoholic, so let's make it quick, as long as it's not painful. Just get it over with. And I welcomed the idea. Bill talks about in the story how we welcomed the idea of dying. That's what I was brought to. God says, I got other plans for you. See, what I have found out here doing this deal for a few years in Alcoholics Anonymous is I can see to the end of that room. I can see to the end of that room clearly. God sees way beyond that, and I can't. So I make plans according to my limited distance and my limited sight distance, if that makes any sense. That's all I know. I think I know everything because I see the whole room. You dig? But see, God's got some other plans for me, and I can't see beyond that, and I get tight when I don't know what's going on. And so what I do is I said, give me a steering wheel, God, because you're not following the script I just wrote. So give it to me. Go ahead, go. I hit a few trees, and I said, okay, you better take it. That's what I have found out. In 1988, I didn't know anything about this stuff. I didn't know I was going to wind up here. I didn't know I was going to be looking for a sponsor with the desperation of a drowning man. I didn't know I was going to take to this work with a desperation of a drowning man. I knew nothing about that. I just knew I don't want to drink. I was addicted to some other things that were killing me also. I don't want to do that stuff. And so what happens? I go to my seventh and, God willing, last rehab, and I get separated from alcohol by some doctors and some counselors and whatever they do up there. And I look the part of a dying drunk. And you know what? After 10 days, Bill talks about in the Mayflower Hotel about the insidious insanity of the first drink. Well, it was galloping back to me, and I was casting aside what I just left behind. And that was what I just described, living in a hallway, dying. Because my mind came back and says, hey, Pete, we'll drink little bit differently. We'll stay off the blackberry brandy. We'll go back to Jack Daniels and drink like a man. We'll regulate, we'll control, we'll do something, but we've got to get out of this place called rehab now. God interrupted that, and I wound up in Minnesota, and some wonderful people were put in my life back then. People, since I've gotten sober, have been put in my life, been put in my path. Whether it was 10 minutes or they're still in my life, they were put there. Because every time I try to pick people in my life, they were always as bad as me or worse. And God says, let me take care of this one too, so I will put these people in your life. And in Minnesota, some really neat people were put in my path. And they disturbed me many times on the question of alcoholism. They got me angry many times. They gave me truth over and over again, and I would shift in a chair. Like lots of times when I give a talk, I see people shifting because I'm delivering some truth that you're not too comfortable to hear. Because it may wake you up a little bit, and guess what? Waking up is not pleasant. My sponsor wakes me up regularly. It's not pleasant looking at truth, writing inventory. After coming out, you know, you discuss someone with a friend, and you're very, very sure that you are so right in this discussion. And then you start to get that quiet voice that maybe you weren't so right. And then you go write inventory and you find out how wrong you are. That is not pleasant. But it certainly wakes you up. Waking up is not pleasant. After about 10 months of living in Minnesota, I was brought home to my home group, and I had an appointed teacher put in my life, my first sponsor. And we began this journey. I had a sponsor in Minnesota who started to walk me through this big book. Came back to Brooklyn, and another teacher put my life, and I began. And my sponsors, all of them, never said, well, maybe you should go home and read page 449 and read acceptance every time you're in a jam. Or maybe you should say the serenity prayer all day long. Or don't worry about the steps, they'll get you. Or don't rush the steps because it may get you drunk. They didn't do any of that stuff because they weren't looking to kill me. They were looking to save me. And I was brought to the Free Spirit Group, my home group, and I walked with this man. He allowed me to walk with him through this book, and something happened for me, way beyond me, way beyond Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went from experience relief to freedom. If you're doing this deal, and you have a sponsor, and you're walking through these steps, and you have an experience with these steps, you won't experience relief. You'll get free. It's a big difference. And that's what happened to me, little by slowly, in God's time. Almost 2 years ago, maybe 18 months ago, another teacher was put my life in a new sponsor, and I went through this work again. And we're getting ready to do it again, to go through this work once again, experience have a new experience with this power, because that's what I found out it's about. It's about having deeper relationship with this God, new experience with this God, to lay aside old ideas that suddenly show up because of ego. We start to experience contempt, pride, and investigation on a lot of things, and ego will never tell you that's what's going on. Ego would justify every bad action I do. So what do? I go through this work and lose again. I get things removed in order to get free. 1988, none of this stuff was part of my vocabulary. My vocabulary consisted of a few curse words and give me a drink. I was reduced to that. I remember right before I got sober, I don't stutter at all. In 1988, I had a stuttering problem because I couldn't talk. People were saying, what happened to you, man? Not only did you look like you're dying, but when did you start stuttering? I couldn't get a sentence out. I remember this. It was demoralizing. Because I said to myself, I never stuttered. What happened? How come I can't talk? My self-esteem was below a gutter. That's where I was brought to. I remember that. How did I get here? In a general way, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. You know, living according to my will, the transformation that happened here and trying to live by God's will today. My first drink came when I was 14 years old, and until I stand here at this very moment, it's never been the same, my life. Never been the same. I went from picking up a drink, an innocent drunk, and getting rocketed to a place that I never experienced before of PCs and comfort because of cold 45 beer, to experiencing the horrors of alcoholism, praying to die every waking moment, and then coming in here and getting free again. I was constantly driven by fear and restlessness and discontent before I picked up my drink when I was my first drink when I was 14 years old. But I remember my first drink very clearly. It was over in Brooklyn, 715 20th Avenue, if any of you guys know that neighborhood. Across the street was a church called St. Dominic's Church, and my friends were drinking cold 45 beer, passing around a quart of beer. Now, what was going on with me was a lot different than what they were experiencing, and that was being joyous, happy, and free, drinking beer. They were passing around the court, they were roughhousing, talking to the girls, there was music in the background because the church was having one of these feasts, these bizarre things that go on. And they seemed to be having a great time. They were in the moment, young, rebels without a clue when you're 16 and 17 and drinking, but there they were. And I can't tell you how bad it was. Like, everyone was in this room and I was out in the hallway watching the action, and I just want to sit down and be a part of this. And there was this fear that drove me, don't go in there. I was the type of guy growing up, if you asked me my name, I'd sweat, my heart would beat, and I'd try to come up with the right answer. If you asked me my name, because God forbid if I got you just a little bit angry by my answer. I would shake in my shoes, the sweat would come off my head, I'd feel my heart beating. You know when you're so nervous that you could almost hear yourself talking, you're paying attention to what you're saying so much, because God forbid, even if you looked at me a little crooked, I was doomed. That's what I was like. This Saturday night was certainly no different. I lived for many years totally, 100% completely attached to my external world. I didn't know it then, but that's the way it was. That's a horrible way to live even now. Because that means when I'm done with this talk, every one of you have to worship every word I said. Because if it's a little bit off, I'll go home crushed. And I can't get anyone angry tonight then. I can't. I can never deliver truth. Because what you feel about me depends on how I feel about me. That's bondage. If I lived like that back then. My friends were passing around this quart of beer, and I remember my dad giving me these very stern warnings about hanging out with these guys on the corner. The bums on the corner is what he called them. That I was going to become a product of my environment. You know, I remember hearing the words, do the right thing. If I had a dollar every time my dad told me, do the right thing, I'd be a rich man today. And my thing, I was so afraid of him, I would never ask him a question or give him an answer, a smart one at least. I would walk around saying, okay, do the right thing, how? What does that mean? Kind of like when you come in A and people say, work the slogans, easy does it, first things first. I would sit in the chair and go, sounds nice, how? Give me some direction. Where's the booklet on how to do this stuff? And that's what was going on with me back then. And my dad gave me these clear warnings, and he made it abundantly clear to me, not only don't hang out with the bums, so don't bring any of the girls, you know, around this house. And so there I was, watching my friend drink, and I wanted desperately to get in there and mix in with them. Anything other than what I was experiencing, which was torment, bless you. So the quote went around a few times, and I don't know why till right now, but I put my hand in there, and I grabbed the beer. I remember my friends giving me like a difficult time and ripping me a little bit because, you know, Mr. Perfect here is going to drink. And I grabbed the quart of beer, and it went down, and I remember nothing happened on the first few pops. And I remember thinking, so what's the big deal, and why are they giving me such a hard time? Why is my dad giving me such a hard time? This was harmless. I took a few pops off a quart. I didn't know what was waiting there. So I drank a little bit more, and I drank some more, and I drank a little bit more, and you know what? Something happened. I started to experience for the very first time in my life ease and comfort by taking a few drinks. As our book says, drinks we saw this taken with impunity. I started to experience ease and comfort. The vibrating that was going on inside of me, little by slowly, started to go away. The mind that was barking at me and screaming at me, the most horrific things about me and everything around me, started to get quiet. Spring summertime was my first drunk. January 23rd of that same year, I lose my mom to this illness. And I watched her year after year after year, get sicker and sicker and sicker, and could not stop drinking as many times she wanted to. I remember mixing her drinks. I remember pouring her drinks. I remember hiding the bottle from my dad for her. I remember hiding her pills. I remember cleaning up after her. Just a lot of things. As a little boy, I was doing this stuff up until the time she died. And so when she died, not only was I completely leveled by that, because the pain was horrific, this design for living that I had was taken out of my life. There was this huge void in my life when this woman died. But also walk with, if I didn't hide the bottle, if I told Dad she was drinking, if I didn't give her the pills, if I would have put more water in there, I could have done something to stop her dying. At 14, that's a horrible way to live, let alone when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on. Living, I should do something to stop this, but if I tell my dad, she's going to be angry with me. And if I don't, she's getting sick and you're in this place. And then she dies, and the first thing you do when I walked into the funeral parlor was, my knees went out from under me, I almost collapsed, I remember that, and there's something went off, you should have done something to stop this. What a horrible way to live. So guess what? Saturday night on the corner of 75th Street and 20th Avenue, I start feeling nice because of cold 45 beer, and that was removed. Why not drink some more? Because I finally experienced some freedom, and that stuff is removed from me. I'm not afraid of my dad. I'm not thinking about the cops. I'm not even thinking about me at this moment, and I'm certainly not thinking about all of this guilt and pain and loss that I experienced. I am here. Guess what? I was awake to the present moment drinking cold 45 beer. I'll tell you that. There was no before, no later on. I'll take more. And I was rocketed, man. I was rocketed somewhere out there that was indescribably wonderful. What a good deal drinking beer. And I'll tell you this, alcohol worked on my alcoholism for a long time. I was tormented by me for a long time. And if I'm not careful, in here, doing this deal, when I back off, guess what? I torment me again. One of the great things that came out of a seven-step, after taking my seven-step with my sponsor, and sitting in a meditation that I was moved to do, was God, save me from me. Well, that's who's going to do me in. Me. Because alcoholism owns me, not my spirit. When I'm integrated with that, there was not even a thought about a drink. I'm free. With all the mistakes I make, with all the falling short that I do, I'm free. Big difference. Back then it was different. And so this Saturday night, I drank, man, and I got rocketed out there. And I remember thinking, why did I wait so long for? I finally can breathe. Well, you know what? There were no consequences the first time I got fired up. None at all. I didn't soil my clothes, which was to happen. I didn't get into any fistfights, which I lost most of the fistfights that were going to happen to me. You know, I was like an idiot, man. I walk into the worst neighborhood, get into it with somebody, and you try to fight the biggest guy. Well, I'm not the biggest guy. Bill's laughing. Did you hit me when I was out there? No. Okay. I mean, I got leveled many times. Got hit with bats and things. I mean, I'm lucky I'm here tonight. But I would do things like that. And being an Italian from Brooklyn, thinking I'm like the Godfather, I'd go back and ask for more, you know, because you ruined my reputation or something. Don't you know who I am? I got into lots of jams like that. I didn't know any of that stuff was going to happen to me. That didn't happen to me on the first drunk. You know, being homeless and being unemployable, I didn't know that was part of this deal of getting drunk Saturday night. All to happen to me. Alcoholism, you know, had a road paved right to hell for me. I didn't know it back then. Bill says some great words in his story, how this, you know, drink turned this fight like a boomerang and at the end cut him to ribbons. I totally identify with that. It ripped me apart and left me at death's door. There were many times through my drinking when I had the most powerful desire to stop drinking. I said, I'm never doing this again. I would look at my dad in the eye and say, I'm done. I swear I'm done. I'm never going to drink again. I would look at myself in the mirror when I could or lay in bed while my head was spinning and say, I am done. I swear never again. It's ruining everything. And then suddenly the thought crossed my mind that maybe I can do it a little bit different. Just a little bit different. I'll be careful. I need a new girlfriend is what I need. You know. I need to dress better. I'll grow a beard. I'll be a new man. You know, anything. But God forbid, in that moment, if I said, the drink is what's killing me, it doesn't make a difference what girl I'm going out with or how I look. It's the drink that's killing me, and what's behind that is this thing called alcoholism. And that had to be taken care of. How? By awakening the spirit. Who knew back then? I started to drink on weekends, and it rolled into, it was Saturday nights and Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and it progressed into during the week, and little by slowly I started to experience some consequences, and it would be things like my dad giving me the riot act the next morning, the next day, a couple of days later, because I had two kid brothers at home who idolized me. They tried to be like me, and I knew it, and it was a great thing and also a huge responsibility. But I embraced that because I was their older brother, and I looked out for them. But suddenly, drink took over my life, and they weren't so important. In fact, nothing was so important anymore. And from idolizing me, when I would come home drunk after leaving the house sober, I wasn't the most pleasant drunk all the time. And they started to become fearful of me, wondering what walked in the door, or how is he going to walk in the door tonight? Because my dad would be out hanging out with his friends and doing his thing, and my kid brothers would be at home playing board games or watching TV, and I'd show up. Midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, whatever it was, in the condition I was usually in, drunk and nasty, or full of like self-pity and taking it out on my kid brothers. I had this guy called Dad, who was cunning, baffling, powerful. He could have been 20 feet tall for all I knew. Scared to death of him, and I'm stuck here. My design for living, Mom was removed, and I had a lot of hate inside of me, a lot of disappointment, and I think when she died, I was separated from this power. I think we all get separated from this power somewhere, and for me, I think that's where it happened. I was completely lost, to be quite honest with you. I fronted really good for a short time, but I was completely lost. I found a solution, though. It's called beer, and I depended on it to take me away from me, take me away from everything. Consequences start to get more severe as my drink problems start to progress, as my alcoholism starts to progress. And they would be things like way beyond blowing curfew, way beyond, you know, arguing with my dad, way beyond like arguing with my kid brothers. What I start to do was become a coward and steal from my family. And I start to take things that didn't belong to me, like money and jewelry. Disrespect others' property. I was full of me. It was all about me all the time. Whether I verbalize it or not, it was always about me. Big Book says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Because we're in Alcoholics Anonymous, separated from alcohol, if you think that's not part of your problem, you're mistaken, because it is. Alcoholism lays in wait. It doesn't care how long I'm. It doesn't care. I'm 15 years sober. Don't care. They'll wait. Like the FBI looking for a criminal, they'll wait. And they wait, and then they get you. Alcohol is the same deal. My consequences got worse, and I got caught one time stealing from my dad, because what I would do is I had the brainstorm of if I would write out found his checkbook, and if I would forge his name on these checks, I would be able to go down to the bodega or the liquor store and cash them. And I would be able to get some money to get fired up. So that I had a great idea. Wow, I'm brilliant. Why didn't I think of this a while ago? And so I would sign his name and write it out for 20 bucks or 40 bucks in cash and go get fired up. And I did that. I said this many times. I think about it now how stupid this was. I did it for a short time because I got caught because I knew nothing about something called checking statements. And these things came to him, and he came looking for me, and he caught me over in Manhattan. And I was by the Brooklyn Bridge, Southbridge Towers down there. And I was sitting in a car with this girl, and he drove up, jumped out of the car, screamed my name, and I knew I was in serious trouble. And he walked across the street. Now, common sense would say, you're in the car, drive away. The enemy's approaching. Drive away. And I left her in the car, and I ran away. Like, you deal with him. I'm out of here. And he screamed my name a few times, and, you know, it was like the cops yelling, don't move. And I froze. He approached me. My dad is a street guy, a tough guy. And he has a habit of looking you dead in the eye when you talk to him. And if you kind of gunshy and look away, he knows you're lying. Till this moment. You got to look at my dad right in the eye for him to trust you. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that on a good day back then. And so what I did was I started to come up with these fake tears, blame the girl in the car with her fault. You know, she made me do it. And so did the guys in the neighborhood. But he was about two steps ahead of me because he didn't buy any of it, thank God. I didn't know he was in touch with, like, people who were doing this deal. He would call up these phone numbers, and he'd wind up getting places like New York Intergroup, and they would give him a little background on what to expect from me. So he didn't buy anything I gave him. What he did was sent me to my first rehab. And I really went because I was looking to get further pissed off at me. So I got the heat off and I went away to rehab. And I will tell you, most of my rehabs were not because of some wonderful, courageous person that I was. I'm going to do something about my alcohol, so I'll check into the rehab and come out and, you know, be a great deal in my family. It was about getting the heat off, case closed. It got hot. I don't want this. I'll go away for a little while. And that's what my first rehab was about. And I remember going to this place in Long Island, this really nice place. They had a gymnasium down the road. They take you on these nature walks. Talk about your inner child and your feelings. How do you feel today? You know, oh, I'm angry. What does that mean? I'm pissed off. Describe pissed off. You know, all these wonderful therapeutic things. Nice stuff, but, you know, not the thing I needed at that moment. What I needed, really, I think about this often, back then, was another drink so I can hit a bottom. So when I come in there and they were talking about this stuff, I said, it's better than what I was doing. You follow? So after 28 days, I get out after doing a lot of push-ups and sit-ups. I look terrific. I had, you know, I was working out and I put on some weight. I look wonderful on my way out of rehab. Better than when I looked going on the way in, but this is what I did. I inquired about some AA meetings on the way to the Lower East Side without a girlfriend meet me at the door. And I said, I'm coming home, like I did 5 years in Sing Sing or something. I'm coming home. Bring a bottle to celebrate my homecoming. Peter's getting out. And so she did. She brought a bottle. I cracked the seal, started drinking. And you know what? The allergy took over. The thing that makes me different from the moderate drinker or the hard drinker. Three things. The allergy to alcohol, the phenomenon called craving, that when I drink, the cravings intensify, never satisfied, more with my drink, separates me from other drinkers, from the hard and moderate drinker. The mental obsession to alcohol, that when I was drinking, all I can think about was another drink, and when I wasn't, I was in a state of obsession, when am I going to drink? It owned me, the state of obsession, and that's what takes me back to a drink. Why? Because there's nothing going on with the spirit. It's shut down. I'm blocked from it. Whatever word works for you. I used to call it spiritually sick. I found out my spirit doesn't get sick. I get blocked from it. But those three things separate me. That allergy never occurs in the average temperature drinker, by the way. So if you're here tonight wondering what you are, if you have somebody walk you through the first 43, 44 pages of this book, you may find out what your truth is. But those three things separate me from other drinkers. Not DWI, not puking on my clothes, not winding up in the hallway. That's part of it, but not what necessarily separates me from those other drinkers. I had a girlfriend meet me at the door, and I started drinking, and the allergy took over, and I was right back to the same vicious cycle again. And I didn't think I had much of a problem back then. My biggest problem with my drinking back then was everyone else's problem with my drinking. People were pointing fingers at me over and over and over again. I got a job as a longshoreman on the Brooklyn waterfront, not the training ground for spiritual growth, believe me. These are guys who are fed up with the day at sunrise, and there I am. And I'm doing my deal down there and learn how to do a lot of illegal activities right away, all for the price of a drink. I mean, I would get paid. We used to get paid when I first started on the pier Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning, I would get a check, a nice check. And somewhere Thursday, I was borrowing money. They switched our payroll to Thursdays. I never made it into the weekend with money. In fact, even if I had money on me, I would borrow money because I knew I was going to be broke through the weekend. I just knew it. And what do you do when you're desperate and you need money, and people who are friendly with you say, I don't have money to give you anymore, you start to look for illegal people to borrow money off of. And I would do that and use my dad's name so they would loan me money, and they wanted money back every week, a little bit. Never able to do that one either. And my dad would have to bail me out of these jackpots over and over again. This thing called alcoholism start to level my family, and they start to experience terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair, all of those things because of me and what I was bringing to the table. They start to become fearful of things they were never fearful about. They start to worry. When the phone rang, was this it? Prior to that, they were sleeping very nicely. They never hid their jewelry or their money or pocketbooks or wherever I went until I showed up. So how could I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and stand at a podium like this and say, and mean it, don't drink and go to meetings and you're a winner? If you're a non-alcoholic, that may work for you. If you're a real alcoholic, I got to take the responsibility for killing you with that statement. I won't do that. All you have to do is not drink. That's bad information for a real alcoholic. Yeah, you're supposed to stay away from a drink, but you don't have the power, nor do I, to do it. In fact, if I can just stay away from a drink, why would I be here? I just stay home and not drink, right? Right. But we come here, why? To get some information, to have an experience with, to wake up and just come back here and to help someone else. I made many, many attempts to stop drinking. I could never do it. So what happens to me? I go about my business and I hit my second rehab and I hit my third rehab and I hit my fourth rehab. And by now, everyone on the waterfront knew about me. You know, if I was showing up to your office, or if I was showing up to where you guys were hanging out, I was there for one reason and they knew it. It wasn't to say, good morning, how's the day? It was usually to borrow money. I think about how I lived back then and how I live now, how I'm allowed to live now. I cringe at that. Because I just don't live like that anymore. I'm so far removed from that because of what I've been given here. I'm here tonight, thank the good Lord, with dignity. Back then, I didn't even know what that meant. I had none. Alcoholism owned me. I remember getting bounced off the waterfront and then get my job back and bounced off and get my job back. And what I was also doing was going from place to place to place. My dad threw me out, put me back in and threw me out, would give me money, deny me money, all to save my life. And I remember hating him for every action he took. If he gave me money, it wasn't enough. And when he threw me out or denied me money, I hated him. It was all about me. The same thing with my kid brothers. These are people who I adore today. Back then it was different. See, alcoholism only lets me see me and only my view. Only my part, only my angle, all about me. God forbid alcoholism should let me see what I'm doing to you. Why? I would wake up, maybe do something about it. Couldn't do it. I went to live with my grandparents, and my grandmother, like my dad, with a broken heart, had to throw me out. And I would bounce from girlfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend's house. You know, go out drinking, and I'd make a joke about it, but some ugly scenes. When you're drinking, the lights are low, you're swearing she's Bo Derek. And when you wake up the next morning next to Bo Diddley, you wonder how did that happen. I would wake up in these places, roaches on the wall, and I'm like, how do I do this, man? I gotta stop. And I make a sincere plea, I'm never gonna do this again. And then suddenly, you know, the wrinkles get out of your belly, and you know you're needing a drink. And by the time I hit my fifth rehab, I needed to drink. Even if I wanted to stop, I couldn't, because I started to get sick now when I wasn't drinking. I was experiencing the shakes and the throwing up when I wasn't. I remember hitting my fifth rehab and going in there for 9 weeks. And I was separated from alcohol for 9 weeks, physically separated from alcohol, taken apart, separated. 9 weeks. I was out on a Saturday and drunk Monday. So that's why I tell people here, being separated from alcohol has very little to do with being a recovered alcoholic. It just means you're separated. This gentleman celebrated 90 days. Somebody else celebrated 90 days. It just means you're separated unless you're doing something with the spirit, unless you're doing something with this work to wake up. Alcoholics don't care how long I'm separated. And that's what was going on with me back then, because Monday I was drunk. I was right back to the same vicious cycle again, and I brought back like the whole Lower East Side into my life. This apartment I got, by the way, along the way, my dad gave me this apartment, set me up in this little studio apartment. And what I did was I brought like the lower part of Manhattan, the Lower East Side, Alphabet City, was basically in there with them, whether they were there or not. It was a pigsty. My bed was filthy. My bathroom was filthy. The place was filthy. I was in worse condition than the place looked. And I lived for the next drink. And that's not for shock value, but that's just where I was brought to. And I hated going through that back then. I would never, ever survive it. But my God sees beyond this room, and he knew exactly what I needed to catapult me here tonight and do the work I do. I do the work I do even now while my external conditions have been completely changed. My external world has been going through these major, major overhaul, these major changes. And there were a few times when it started, I wondered, why, and am I going to make it through this? But God, in his infinite mercy, knows exactly what I need, and I'm so grateful for the changes that have been going on, as uncomfortable as they are at times. This apartment I lived in, I remember having these moments of trying to kill myself. I remember downing pills, wanting not to wake up. I remember living in a flea bag motel in Staten Island, downing pills, not wanting to wake up. And in this place one time, I remember being in not a blackout, and I certainly wasn't sober, but being somewhere in there where I would have these crying jags and just keep talking to I don't know who, and just a nervous breakdown many times, sitting on the edge of the bed or rolled up in the corner and just rocking and just being in this place of complete torment. And alcoholism was appalling, the whole deal. That's just what it wanted. And I got bounced out of this apartment, and I remember I was homeless, and it's a weird thing about being homeless, because I thought, well, you know what, I don't have to ever worry about when I'm coming home or who I have to see. I just bounce around. And I remember the first night I was homeless, how frightened I was, because I realized I was completely alone, and if I die tonight, no one would know. I was scared to death the first night I was homeless, more than I've ever been before. And what was worse is I had alcoholism screaming at me more. I lost contact with my family and obviously got bounced off the waterfront. And, you know, we live in hallways and panhandle by the Manhattan Bridge. If any truck drivers in here tonight, I thank you for all you did for me, because I would see them from the waterfront and they knew me, they knew my dad, and they would throw money out the window when I would hail them down by the Manhattan Bridge. And never forget, one guy says, I'm going to pray for you. His prayers were answered. He does, probably doesn't, never knows it. Another guy says, I'll tell your dad you're down here. Does your dad know you're down here? But they would stop. If you go by the Manhattan side of Manhattan Bridge, that's a busy intersection. And I would flag these guys down, looking the part of a drunk, and every one of them would stop. Throw $2 out the window. I would say, I'm stuck. I need gas for my car, man. I'm like, you know, completely falling apart. But that's what they would do. I wound up outside the Port Authority. I don't know how I got there, what happened afterwards, but I was outside the Port Authority, and I had this moment of clarity. You know, where God serves us our truth, with that book talks about the flimsy reed that proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. My truth was served to me, and I had a moment of clarity, of reality, of truth. And that was this. I knew what I was. I woke up to that. And I remember, you know, my mom and my dad and my kid brothers and the life I was living for the last so many years. And what I did in that moment was curse God. I hated God for a long time for taking my mom, for turning me into what I turned into, for taking my family from my life. And I don't know what happened to me afterwards, but I remember this clearly. A short time later, I was in another hallway. And it was either drink and die or do something. And that was made clear to me. And God once again, you know, handed this reed, this flimsy reed to me. It was like, you know, hold on, I'll pull you ashore. This time, there were no bargaining chips for me. There were no reservations, no lurking notion. There was nothing. Earlier, I talked about things being removed from us. Everything was removed from me. So I can have an experience with this God as it currently has to be. Removal over and over and over again. I've experienced that this awakening thing we talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous is not by accumulating stuff, the relationship, the car, the money, being popular, none of that stuff. But it's about removal of things that are blocking me from this power, and that is not pleasant, as it certainly wasn't for me in 1988, where everything was removed, including the drinking, which was the only thing I thought was saving me. The only thing to get through another day with. That was removed, and I came to that place of truth by loving God. And I remember making a sincere plea to this God, maybe as honest as I will ever be in my entire life, and I hope I'm here for the rest of my life. I pray I'm here for the rest of my life, recovered. But at that moment, there was no before and no later on. It was like, Father, if you're out there, save me from this, because I know I'm going to die. I drink, I'm done. I don't give that lip service. I was brought to that place, that jumping off place, that little spot. So what did God do? You know, if he was maybe one of us or maybe a civilian, he would have said, hey, Pete, you know, every bridge I put in front of you, you burned. I put you in 6 rehabs. You blew it. You're unemployable. You cursed your family. Look what you did with the life I gave you. So you know what? I have to lock doors. Or I'm going to treat someone else, not you. We do it in here. He's back again. She's back again. I can't even deal with this one. We do it. I've seen it. What I've learned is how dare I? How dare? I have some close friends to me, one in particular, who's been doing this deal a long time. Get angry, give him truth, piss him off, never turn my back on him, ever, ever. That's not what God did. God embraced me like a little baby who's hurt. Didn't baby me, didn't coddle me, but the little baby who's hurt, what do? You pick him up and hold him in your lap, and you let them know he's okay, she's okay, and you teach, you nurture. That's what he did for me. Ain't that a good deal? Because based on my track record, if it was me walking in, I would have said the same thing. I'm done with you. And he placed me in my seventh, and God willing, last rehab, because my sixth rehab was about a day and a half, and I signed myself out. I could not take the idea of staying in this rehab because I know what I was in for. I knew the detox routine. And it was a state of obsession. I signed myself out. Here I am placed in my seventh, and God willing, last rehab. You know what? 10 days in this place, and I want to go drink again more than anything in the world. I already conveniently forgot what brought me in there and this plea I made to this God, because that's what alcoholism does. It will not let me remember the pain of yesterday. It'll pretty up a junkyard to get me drunk again. Wants me dead, settle for me drunk, and it will do anything to get me there. That's why 15 years in here doing this deal, I'm so blessed that I've been moved to continue doing this work, because I know it's waiting for me, God forbid. Got a pretty good idea. It's torment. It's terror. It's being owned by a drink. I've been to so many parties and receptions and weddings and all of it where drink was around me. I've gone to some weddings where you walk in, you hear the guy in the stall sniffing away. I know the deal. I used to be him. None of that stuff that I have to run to the phone and call my sponsor. They're drinking. They're hitting my triggers. Oh, please. Why do we hit triggers at AA meetings? What is that? No, what happened for me, when I went to these places and drinking was going on, I was separated from it, removed, put in a place of neutrality, safe and protected. And I walk into the bathroom and hear the idiot sniffing cocaine in behind the stall. I say a prayer for them because I know what they're dealing with. Thinking they're sharp. Sharp as a bowling ball, but there they are. I'm free of that. Gratitude, and I pray for them, take care of my business, and I go back into the party. And then God gave me this wonderful gift, and I think you know what I'm talking about. When you attend weddings or whatever, you get that thing, and you're time to leave. There's a shift in the party. You ever notice that? All of a sudden, your boss becomes a fool, the nice girl becomes everyone's girlfriend, and things start to change, and you know it's time to go. And that's what I listen to. I go home safe and protected. I don't have to write 65 pages of inventory for 20 people drinking around me. You know, I don't have to take a quarter to a wedding anymore to make the phone call. By the way, if you're in a state of obsession, who's making a phone call? Sponsor, I'm about to drink. Can you come get me? No, we get drunk and then we call up in tears. I drank, help me. That's what I did. I didn't get that opportunity being in rehab to go drink. They sent me to God's country, and I say that with love and respect, to Minnesota, where people were doing this deal. And they told me what I was suffering from, this illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer, that I find a spiritual basis of life or else, and I knew what the or else was about. It brought me in here, for Christ's sake. I knew what it was about. And they gave me the deal right away. I would hear things like, do the first three steps, yay, yay, wolf, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, drunk, a step a year drunk. Don't rush into the fourth step. It may get you drunk. Drunk. Put the plug in the jug. The real alcoholic, the plug came out of the jug. I can never leave it plugged in because it would look at me and talk to me until it came out and I got drunk. All great information if you're not a real alcoholic. It works for you. Join the sober softball team. You stay sober if you're a hard drinker. I make a couple of meetings a week, never do the steps, don't even talk about the big book. I'll look at the 12 and 12 every week. You know, that works for some people. I get drunk on that stuff. I don't mean to piss anybody off, because if that's what you're doing and it's working for you, great. But I need to share from my experience. Stuff like that kept me sick and I got drunk over it. What I needed was power. Chapter 2 Agnostic says, lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find the power by which I could live. And this book was going to enable me to find the power, find this power. This book, I have an experience with the information in this book, takes me to God and I get free. Lack of power, one of the most powerful sentences in the big book, was my dilemma. Lack of power. After a while, I couldn't even rely on the group of junks for good orderly direction, because what I needed was a guy personal to me. When I was alone home and my head hit the pillow, when I closed the doors and I was removed from you guys, when I was walking down the street, not around any other AAs, what was I going to do? How was I going to live? How was I going to stay away from a drink without power? I get drunk without it. You with me? Great people God put in my life and shared this with me and shared their experiences with me. And you know what? By the time I got to Minnesota and I came home to my home group, the Free Spirit Group, and 15 years later, I still seek this with the desperation of a drowning man, because God has given me a wonderful gift. He has kept my past right here for me. I don't live in it, but I know what it's about. That's why when I'm in disagreement with other people, or the external conditions are pissing me off about my life, and I'm trying to change you so I feel good, I know that is not a good place for me to be, because I know where it takes me to. Many times it's like we go through life, when this changes, when that changes, when you do what I want, I will feel okay. That's a lie. It would help, but it's not going to get me free. What's going to get me free is by being right with God. That's work. I can't say, well, by Tuesday afternoon I'm going to be spiritual. I'd like to be. I have found it's been about, a book talks about spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. William James calls it the educational variety. Over time, a shift happens. My job is to suit up and show up with pen to paper and follow directions. 15 years later, I call my sponsor a few times a week, and when I know certain things in my life are giving me uncomfortability or pain, or I don't like the way I'm talking, or I don't like the way I'm thinking, I don't rely on me to move through it, I call up my sponsor. A while ago, I go through unemployment, seeking work, a divorce, I'm coming out of the side, selling my home, finances, well, my finances, I found suddenly were not there. And I'll leave it at that. And it wasn't because of my bad habits with money. It was removed. And I got an idea about that. But for the sake of this meeting, we don't need to go there. And I woke up one day and said, where's my money? Where's my house? Going to have to sell it. Marriage is done. What's God got for me? And what I do with that is not relying upon me to move through that. I work very hard in long hours with my sponsor. And you know what? I have to say this. People in AA have been there for me every day. How am I doing? When I knew I was getting divorced, I didn't tell anyone for a while. And then I started letting my friends in on it. No one judged me. They called me up and said, Pete, how you doing? When I had to sell my house, no one said, why you have to sell your house for? How can I help? When I found out that a lot of my finances were missing, people didn't say, what's wrong with you? How come you didn't see this when it was happening? They said, what can we do to help? When I had to fix up my house to sell it, my two friends here, Gerard and Linda, came over and fixed my house and helped me get that house going good, so I can sell it. My dad, who I would run from when I would see him way back when, who may be my closest friend today in the whole world, shows up and asks, what can I do to help? My kid brother is the same thing. People in AA have been there for me when I walk in here and go in through this stuff. I'm so grateful that a lot of this stuff that started maybe over 6 months ago, 8 months ago, is starting to find its place. And this page is being turned. Not as fast as I wanted to, but being turned. I will tell you this, and I don't give this lip service. I'm 44, been sober since 1988, thank God. Gone through a whole lot of things. I get asked to speak in a lot of places. A whole lot of things going on with AA. And I will tell you this from the bottom of my heart. I've never been so excited about my life. I feel like my life has just begun now. That all of this stuff was, as God does, put the stones in place. Put the stones in place so I can start my life now at 44. Because I'm walking through this stuff with dignity. Wonderful gift. Linda, my friend Linda, was put in my life not too long ago. supportive, loving, right with you the whole step of the way. My sponsor told me a long time ago, maybe you'll meet somebody who's going to walk this journey with you. He said a prayer for me. Ain't that neat? I learned to cherish gifts instead of abusing them. I learned to cherish Alcoholics Anonymous instead of abusing it. And I know I say things when I give a talk that, you know, AA needs to do this and AA needs to do that. It comes out of a place of love and care because I've seen too much nonsense going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And people die. But I just want to reiterate how people in AA have been there for me the way when I walked in here as I go through this stuff now and walk out on the other side of it, getting free again. My life is wonderful, but all the external conditions, not the way I wrote them out to be. It couldn't have been made better for me, though. Wonderful things ahead of me, very exciting life ahead of me, and I'm so excited about it. Most nights, I put my head on the pillow and sleep. There are those nights I toss and turn. Most nights I sleep. And I wake up and I have wonderful people around me, wonderful friends around me. It's great. All because of God moving me to practice these principles, all my affairs, with all the falling short that I do. I stand here tonight with dignity because of what you have given me, and I hope somehow, some way, I can stay teachable and pass this message on with the same love and gratitude that you have given it to me each and every day. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked into a room filled with the grace of God, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Every one of you are the living grace of God, and I thank you for my life and my sobriety.